four men stepped into Fiddler's Green, and they went straight to one of the two pot-bellied stoves, which were glowing red from the coal fire inside. They stood with their hands extended out into the bubble of heat that surrounded the stove.
You fellas want anything to drink, or are you just coming in to get warm? Which, don't get me wrong, I'd be a miserable sort if I didn't let you warm yourselves on a cold day like this.
Whiskey.
For all four of you?
Yeah, bring it over that table.
Biff poured the drinks and put them on a tray and nodded at a young woman who was standing at the bar next to a cowboy.
Molly, take these drinks over to the gentleman, will you?
Sure thing.
Molly took the drinks over to the table just as the men were taking their seats.
Tell me, girl. Does a fella by the name of Duff McAllister ever come in here?
Oh, yeah, he comes in often. He and Biff are great friends.
Who's Biff?
Biff is the man standing behind the bar. He owns the place. Anything else I can do for you?
Yeah, you can go away and leave us alone. We got some palavering to do.
I'll be glad to oblige.
$50 apiece, and all we gotta do is kill one man.
From what I hear, he's not that easy a man to kill.
How hard can it be if there's four of us and only one of him?
How will we know who he is? There ain't none of us ever seen him.
If he comes in here, I expect we'll know soon enough.
Duff rode alongside Smoke, Sally, and Matt as far as Chugwater.
Just stay on this road. Once you cross the Platte River, you can follow Rawhide Runnel on into the settlement.
What's a runnel?
Tis not but a water course, a small stream.
You mean a creek?
Aye, a creek.
Well, why didn't you say so?
Duff, I love the way you use the language.
You'll not forget to tell Megan that I'll be up in a couple more days.
I will personally tell her.
Come on, we'll never get there if we don't start.
Duff watched them ride away, and then he headed for Fiddler's Green.
Hello, Duff. Good to see you.
Hello, Biff.
Have Smoke and Matt returned from Fort Russell yet?
Aye, but they've left again. This time to go to Rawhide Butte. I'll have a...
As if I didn't know what you'd have.
Biff poured scotch into a glass.
Hello, Mr. McAllister.
Biff, how about a bit of the creature for Molly and the young lad who's occupying her time?
Why, thank you, Mr. McAllister.
Be you finding work, lad?
No, sir. None to speak of, what with it being winter. A little part-time here and there is all.
What's your name?
It's Nicholson, sir. Bob Nicholson.
Well, Mr. Nicholson, 'tis not good that a man be without employment during the Christmas season. If you be of a mind to, come out the sky mirror with me, and I'll present you to my foreman, Mr. Gleason. I believe we can accommodate a willing worker. You are a willing worker, are you not?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm a very willing worker. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
I don't care what anyone says, Duff. I think you're a good man.
Biff poured drinks for Molly and Nicholson as well.
Mr. McAllister, the truth is, I don't have a horse.
Well, that doesn't matter all that much. After we leave here, we'll stop by Merrill's livery and rent you one to ride out to the ranch. Once you're there, Elmer will fix you up with a mount, and you can bring the rented animal back.
That's real decent of you, Mr. McAllister.
It's just common sense, lad. I can't have someone working for me if he didn't have a horse now, can I?
No, sir, I reckon not.
At the table, the men listened to the conversation at the bar.
That's it.
What's it?
They're gonna go to the livery stable to get a horse. That's where we'll wait for him.
We ain't gonna call him out or anything, are we? The reason I ask is I don't think $50 is enough to actually have to face someone down.
No, we ain't gonna call the sumbitch out. We're just gonna shoot him. Come on.
Back at the bar, Duff turned down a second scotch, choosing a cup of coffee instead.
Mr. McAllister, what have you heard from Miss Parker? Do you know when she'll be back?
Before Christmas, I'm told.
Well, I for one will be glad when she returns. I want to buy a new dress for myself for Christmas.
I expect Duff will be just as glad to see her return as you. Ain't that right, Duff?
I've no intention of waiting till the lass returns. I'll be riding the Rawhide Butte myself in a couple of days.
Well, tell her that the missus and I say hello.
Marshall Farrell stepped into the saloon.
Oh, damn, it's colder than hell out there.
Doesn't seem to me like it would have to be very cold to be colder than hell. At least, not from what I've heard of the place.
Yeah, you may have a point there. Biff, do you suppose I could have a cup of coffee with a bit of sweetener, if you get my drift?
I think I can accommodate you.
Got some new wanted posters up. There was a bank robbery up in Sweetwater a few days ago.
A bank robbery, you say?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was more like an attempted bank robbery. Turns out that as they were leaving, one of the bank robbers was shot and killed. He was the one carrying the money, so the other two didn't get away with anything.
Anyone else killed?
Yeah, two more, I'm afraid. Both innocent citizens of the town.
Ugh. Tis a shame at any time of year when such perfidious behavior can take the lives of the innocent. But especially at this time of year. There'll be some sad Christmases with their families, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking so as well. And get this, Duff. Guess who the bank robbers were?
I wouldn't know where to start guessing.
Yeah, you would if you thought about it. It was Jesse and T-Bob Cave. There were a couple of people who recognized him.
Could it be one of them who was killed?
No such luck. They both got away. It was a man named Wally Jacobs who was killed.
I don't believe I've heard of him.
Well, no reason you should have. I don't think he ever quite got around to making a name for himself.
So Jesse and T-Bob got away, did they? It would be a fine Christmas if those two blackguards wound up being caught in the next few days.
Yeah, it would be at that.
How is R.W. getting along? I haven't seen much of him since the funeral.
It's a sad time for him and Nora. You know what he's been doing? He's been spending a lot of time just staring at that horse he bought for his grandson. It is a pitiful thing to see.
I can understand. I'm more than just a bit familiar with grief.
Duff turned to Nicholson.
Lad, would you be up to telling Molly goodbye now, so you can come out to the ranch with me?
Yes, sir.
That's rather strange.
What's rather strange?
The door to the loft of the livery stable is open. Walt normally keeps that door closed to keep out as much of the cold air as possible.
Well, maybe he's cleaning the loft.
I suppose that's possible. Get down!
Mr. McAllister, I don't have a gun.
It's over there, behind the corner.
Duff couldn't actually see his assailants as they were in the dark shadows of the loft. He aimed into the dark maw. Duff ran to the watering trough that was closest to the livery stable and dived behind. Duff looked back across the street and satisfied himself that Nicholson was not in any immediate danger. But when he looked back toward the livery, he saw Walt Merrill standing there, drawn from his office by the curiosity of the gunshots.
Walt, get back!
Walt understood what Duff was shouting about and turned and ran quickly back inside, slamming the door to the little room behind him. Duff aimed just to the right of where the flame pattern had appeared. Following Duff's shot, a body tumbled through the open loft door, hitting hard and raising dust where it fell on the street below.
Son of a bitch, you got Pollard!
Duff got up and ran toward the door of the livery, firing as he went. When he reached the big open double doors of the livery, he ran on through so that he was inside.
Where'd he go? Morris, do you see him?
I think he come inside.
I know he come inside, you dumb sumbitch. My question is, where is he? Deep Rope, do you see him? No.
Duff moved quietly through the barn itself, looking up at the hayloft just overhead. Suddenly, he felt little pieces of hay falling on him, and he stopped because he realized that someone had to be right over him. He pointed his pistol upward.
And would you be for telling me just how you plan to do that? There's only two ways down. You jump, or you come down the ladder. Either way you try, I'll kill you, unless you throw down your guns first.
Let's do it, Adler. I don't mind killing someone for $50, but I'll be damned if I'm willing to get killed for that.
All right, McAllister, we'll be coming down the ladder. Come to the edge and drop your guns down, holster, belt, and all.
A moment later, the pistol belts with the guns in the holster were dropped down. Rifles were dropped next. Two men climbed down.
What happens now?
I hope you boys didn't have any plans for Christmas, for you'll be spending it in jail.
Won't be the first time I spent Christmas behind bars.
Somehow, I'm not surprised.
After Marshal Farrell put the two men in a cell, Duff went back to talk to him.
Lads, I heard you say that you were being paid $50 to kill me. Would you be for telling me who it was would make you such an offer?
Why should we tell you?
Were you paid in advance?
No.
Then why wouldn't you tell me? You'll nae be hanging, you didn't kill anyone. And if you weren't paid, what do you owe the man that got two of your friends killed for nothing?
He's right, Adler. We don't owe Dingo nothing.
Dingo? Would that be Max Dingo?
You got a big mouth, Morris.
Tell me, lad, what kind of pie do you like?
Apple pie. Why do you ask?
I'll see to it you get a piece of pie for telling me who wanted me killed.
He's right. It was Max Dingo. I like cherry pie.
Do you know where I might find this gentleman?
I know where he is. Or at least I've heard where he is. They say he's holed up somewhere in the Laramie Range. Nobody's ever tried to find him, and truth to tell, it would near about be suicide to even try, seeing as how he has a regular fort there.
That's right. He got at least 10 men with him there. You'd be a fool to go after him.
I thank you for the information.
Hey, what about our pie?
I'll bring it to you.
So you had a little excitement on the way here, did you?
Elmer was showing Bob Nicholson, the newly hired hand, around Sky Meadow Ranch.
Wasn't on the way here. It happened before we even left town. Four men jumped Mr. McAllister. He wound up killing two of them and taking the other two to jail. I swear, I ain't never seen nothing like that.
Yeah, well, 4-1 wasn't very fair, and I'll admit it. Well,
I guess not, but them odds didn't seem to bother Mr. McAllister none.
No, you misunderstand what I'm saying, boy. I don't mean 4-1 wasn't fair to Dove. I mean it wasn't fair to the four poor bastards who were dumb enough to try and take him on.
You mean he's done stuff like this before?
Well, now I'm just gonna say this. I've rolled with Quantrill, and I've rolled with Jesse James, and I've sailed the seven seas, and I live with the Injuns. So there ain't much in this world I can say that truly bedazzles me anymore. But Duff McAllister, well, he's someone who does.
I know about the shootout in Chugwater, when 8 men came to kill him, and he killed all 8 of them. I think everybody's heard about that.
Yeah, well, Biff Johnson got one of them. Duff will be the first one to tell you that. Come on now, let me show you the finest ranch in all Wyoming.
Duff McAllister's Sky Meadow Ranch had not grown haphazardly. It was the result of very careful planning. The most prominent building was the main house, called the Big House, by the men who worked there. There was also a barn and a machine shed, a smokehouse, and an ice house. The bunkhouse was one long, low building with a porch that ran the full length of the structure. Next to the bunkhouse was Elmer's house, which had a living room and a bedroom. Next to his house was the kitchen and mess hall. The cook had a private room just off the kitchen.
And we run nothing but Black Angus cattle here. That's the first thing Duff done once he got his ranch started. Now, there were some ranchers that kind of laughed at him, but you better believe it, ain't none of them laughing at him now. That Black Angus brings in anywhere from 30 to 40% more than Hereford's.
Yes, sir. I heard Mr. McAllister was the one that got Black Angus started here in Russell County.
That he did. He knew all about him because that's what he raised back in Scotland. And it ain't just here that he got him started, neither. These ranches all over the West is raising Black Angus now because of Duff.
You like working for him, don't you?
I don't work for the man, son. I work with him. I ain't known him all that long on account of he ain't actually been here for long, but in that short time, well, I reckon I have to say he's the best friend I've ever had, and I know he's the best man I've ever known.
Nicholson made no response because no response was expected.
All right, I showed you near about everything there is to show. There's 3 empty bunks in the bunkhouse. You can tell which ones are on account of the mattresses is rolled up. Just choose one, unroll the mattress, make yourself to home.
When do we start work?
Well, now, I'm glad to see you're concerned about that, but we don't do all that much work in the wintertime, except, oh, maybe haul hay out to the animals now and then when the snow's so washed over that the beeves can't get to the graze. And most of the times in the winter, we just sort of look for things to be done. And from now until after Christmas, we'll more than likely not be doing nothing, except maybe lie around and sleep or play cards or some such like that. Yeah. Truth is, I don't know why Duff even hired you. We sure don't need nobody else. Most ranches start laying off in the winter.
I know. That's how I don't have any work. Mr. Tadlock, he paid off all his men but about 3 or 4. I don't know why Mr. McAllister hired me either. He just asked if I was working, and I told him no, I wasn't.
Well, There's your answer, then. He seen you was out of work, and he just wanted to help, is all. That's tough for you. Come on, let's go into the mess hall, get a cup of coffee. Hell, Cookie might have even made some donuts.
Smoke, Sally, and Matt arrived in Rawhide Butte in mid-afternoon. There were people walking up and down the boardwalks, exchanging greetings. Some were hanging Christmas decorations in store windows.
This is what Christmas is all about. Small towns where everyone knows each other, wishing each other Merry Christmas.
You sound like Charles Dickens.
Who?
He wrote a novel, A Christmas Carol. It's about a small town Christmas.
I've never heard of it.
How can you have never heard of it?
Because he ain't like me. He ain't very educated.
Boy, do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little turkey, the big one.
You're both impossible.
Hey, that looks like the best hotel in town.
Smoke pointed to the biggest building on the street.
Looks to me as if it's the only hotel in town.
Then by definition, doesn't that make it the best hotel in town?
The three tied off their horses in front of the hotel, then went inside where Smoke got two rooms for him, signing the register as Kirby Jensen.
I see you have a dining room.
Yes, sir, Mr. Jensen. And many think it's the finest place to eat in town.
Good.
Smoke, as soon as we check into our room, I'm going to go find Megan.
All right.
Smoke? Well, now see here, are you Smoke Jensen?
Yeah.
Oh my, oh my. I have heard so much about you, sir. May I say that it's a pleasure to have you as a guest in our hotel.
Thank you, sir.
Please, it's Hodge. Hodge Doolin.
Mr. Doolin, could you tell me how to find Cora Ince's dress shop?
Oh, indeed I can. You just go out the front door, you turn left, walk two blocks, and you'll find it right on the corner. There's a sign painted on the front window.
Thank you.
Megan looked up when the door opened. For just a moment, she was surprised at who she saw coming into the store.
Sally?
Hello, Megan.
What in the world are you doing here in Rawhide?
I came to help you help your friend get ready for Christmas. I think Duff is getting a little anxious that maybe you won't make it back in time.
I'd like to think that. Cora, this is my friend Sally Jensen. Sally? This is Cora Ensor.
Hello, Cora.
Hi.
Now, I'm serious. I'm here to work. So what can I do?
Right now, we're trying to think of something to do to promote Christmas in the store. So any ideas or suggestions you might have would be most welcome.
Open your mouth and say ah.
Barney Sadler, who was the first adult Dr. Poindexter had seen with the disease, complied. Using a tongue depressor, Poindexter examined his throat and saw that it was covered with a white mucus covering. It was presenting itself exactly like diphtheria.
When did you first notice the symptoms?
The what?
When did you first start getting sick?
I don't know, about 5 days ago.
Have you been around any school children?
No, I ain't been around no school kids or any other kind of kids. I don't have no kids. Hell, Doc, you know that.
Have you been around anyone who's been around school kids?
Why do you keep asking that question? What does that have to do with anything?
Please, answer my questions, Mr. Sadler. Believe me, they are important.
Well, it's like I said, I ain't been around... No, wait a minute. Now, I helped Rufus McCoy build some things that's going to be used at the school. Seems they're planning on having a play, and Rufus wanted me to, you know, help him build a manger and a stable and such. And he's around kids all the time, seeing as he works as a janitor and handyman at the school.
Thank you for the information.
Now, I still don't know why it's so all fired important about whether or not I've been around anyone who's been around school kids.
Poindexter picked up a rubber ball atomizer.
I'm going to spray this into your throat now, and it's going to burn.
Wait a minute. Now, didn't I just tell you my throat was already hurting? Why do you want to go do something that's going to make it hurt even more for her?
I'm sorry, Mr. Sadler. It has to be done.
Over at Cora's dress shop, Sally stood with her hands on her hips and looked around the store.
Yes, that's what we'll do.
What we'll do? What are you talking about?
I have an idea. I think we should make a special display for Christmas.
Well, that's what we are doing, isn't it? I mean, all the dresses we're displaying are for Christmas. Though, in truth, any dress in the store can be bought for Christmas.
No, I'm thinking more than that. I mean, let's do something artistic. Something that will make people smile. Something that will have them telling others about it, so that they will want to come in and see it as well.
You want to put it up a Christmas tree?
A Christmas tree, yes, but let's not stop there.
Oh, you mean like bunting and greenery and such? I suppose we can, but with all the colorful dresses and bolts of cloth that we have in here anyway, wouldn't a few more ribbons just get lost?
How good are you at drawing?
I suppose it depends on what I need to draw.
Faces.
Faces?
On paper bags. We're going to draw lots of faces on lots of paper bags.
Whose faces are we going to draw?
Nobody's in particular. Just faces of women and children. Then we're going to fill the sacks so that they look like people's heads. Then we're going to give them hair made of yarn.
I don't have any idea in the world what you're thinking about, but I already like it.
You'll like it even more when we get it finished.
Whatever it is.
I think I know what you're talking about. And Sally is right, Corey. You'll love it even more once we are finished.
Marshall Foley was sitting at his desk filling out forms. He looked up as Dr. Poindexter came in.
What brings you here, Dr. Poindexter?
Marshall, did you see the corpse that Tom Welch got from the Rocky Mountain Hotel?
Yeah, I seen him. Damnedest looking corpse I ever saw. That's why I told Tom to have you take a look at him.
I saw him. We've got trouble, Marshal. We've got major trouble.
We've got trouble? What do you mean? You fixing to tell me that you think the fellow was murdered? I mean, I admit the way his neck was swollen up like it was, it looked a little strange, but I didn't think he was murdered.
No, it wasn't murder. It would be better if it was murder. That way the rest of the town wouldn't be affected.
Now you're losing me, Doc. How's the rest of the town affected by finding that fella dead in his hotel room? Especially if he wasn't murdered.
The rest of the town will be affected because I'm going to have to ask you to put the entire population on quarantine. I don't want anybody to be able to come in, and I don't want you to let anyone leave.
Doc, what the hell are you talking about? Why would you want to close down the town like that?
Diphtheria, Marshal. I've treated 3 cases, and young Helen Sinclair has died from the disease.
Where'd this diphtheria come from? How'd it get started in our town?
It started with Ralph Walters, the corpse that came from the hotel. Evidently, he was a traveling entertainer of some sort. He exposed it to the children in school, and they've exposed it to everyone else. It's going to spread, and it's going to spread fast. The best we can do is keep it contained.
Oh, Lord. If it come from him, the kids in the school wasn't the only ones that he was around. He'd done a show for the firemen's benefit. There must have been 40 or 50 that was there. I was there. Damn. Does that mean I have it?
How long ago was the show?
A little over a week ago.
Then the chances are you don't have it, or you would have been showing symptoms by now.
Well, isn't there something you can do about it? I mean, yeah, you say shut down the whole town, but what about the ones that's already got it?
I've sent to Cheyenne for an antitoxin serum. It depends on whether they have any, and if so, if they have enough, that they can send some to us.
How soon do you need the town shut down?
Right away. And Marshall, here comes the hard part. We're going to have to close any place where people gather. That means school, saloons, and stores.
We can't do that, Doc. It's Christmas. I know for a fact the school has a play planned. The merchants have all made special plans for the Christmas season, and people want to be buying Christmas presents and the like. And the saloons? Why, if we close the saloons, there'll likely be a riot in the streets. Hell, you know that as well as anyone.
Marshal, we don't have any choice. We have to act. We have to act fast. I just pray that it's not already too late. The sad truth is, if we don't close all these places, we are going to start having a lot of bodies to bury. Now, which would you rather have? Would you rather have a few disgruntled people, or would you rather have people start dying on you?
Is it really that bad?
Yes, I'm afraid it really is that bad. Like you said, it's Christmas. Do you really think I would come in here to suggest this if I didn't think it absolutely necessary?
You do realize, don't you, that it's going to take an army of deputies to get this done?
I know it's going to be a difficult task.
That's easy for you to say, Doc. All you have to do is tell me to do it. I'm the one that has to get it done.
True. But it isn't easy to treat diphtheria patients either, and I expect they'll be piling up on me pretty soon.
Oh, damn, Doc. You're right. I had no business bellyaching about how hard it's going to be for me. Neither me nor any of my deputies will have it as hard as you. I'm sorry I mouthed off like that.
No apology needed, Marshal. Just do what you can to help me keep this under control.
You got it. I guess I'd better start rounding them up. What about the church? He's saying I have to close the church as well?
You're probably going to need the church.
That's what I was thinking. I expect a lot of people will be wanting to come to church to pray.
Yes, that too.
Cora and Megan soon saw what Sally had in mind when they started drawing faces on the paper sacks. Clothed in the dressing forms, Megan and Cora stuffed the long sleeves of the dresses so that they became arms, then placed the paper sack heads on them. The result was several lifelike figures, both adult and child, gathered around a well-decorated Christmas tree.
Oh, it looks as if they're having a Christmas party.
I just know this is the most beautiful Christmas display in the whole town.
It's all because of you, Sally.
Nonsense. We did it together.
Oh, it's going to be the best Christmas I've ever had. I haven't been this excited about Christmas since I was a little girl.
It makes me anxious to get back home. Thanks to Sally's idea, I'll do the same thing in my store.
Oh, how unthinking of me. Here, I've taken all your time to help me get ready at the expense of your own store.
Not to worry, Cora. Your store is just getting started. You need something like this to attract attention. My store has been going for a few years now. I don't need to introduce anyone to it. And it won't take me long to decorate it once I get back home.
Well, it looks like we came to the right place.
Sally introduced Smoke and Matt to Cora.
Ah, this looks wonderful.
Well, it's all thanks to Sally. She came up with the idea. I can hardly wait until members of the Downtown Merchants Association see it. They'll be pea green with envy.
A man came into the store.
My, I don't believe I've ever had this many men in my store at the same time. Oh, welcome, Deputy Collins. Are you looking for a Christmas present for a lady friend?
No, ma'am. I wish I was. I hate to do this to you, Miss Enser, but I ain't got no choice. We're having to do it to every business in town.
Do what?
Collins handed her a sheet of paper.
By order of Dr. Poindexter, a quarantine has been declared in Rawhide Butte. All places of business are hereby closed. Nobody will be allowed to enter or leave town until the quarantine has been lifted. What? You can't close my business? What are you talking about?
It's nearly Christmas.
It ain't just Miss Enser's business, ma'am. Every business in town is being closed.
Wait a minute. According to this, we can't even go back home.
It ain't me. All I'm doing is helping to spread the word. From what I understand, it's Doc Poindexter doing it.
Surely the doctor can't do this by himself. He's being backed by the marshal, isn't he?
Well, yes, ma'am. I reckon he is, seeing as it was the marshal what gave me these here papers to pass out to all the stores and such.
Is the marshal in his office now?
Yes, ma'am, he is.
We'll just see about this. I can't stay here over Christmas. I have to get back home.
Yes, ma'am. But even if you decide to do it, I don't know how you're going to get it done. There won't be no stagecoaches or even freight wagons running. And the marshal plans to have a deputy posted on all the roads, stopping anyone from coming in, and keeping everyone that's in the town now from leaving.
A few minutes later, Megan, accompanied by Sally, Smoke, and Matt, stepped into the marshal's office. Megan held up the notice.
What is the meaning of this?
Like it says, Miss Parker, whole town is under quarantine.
But why would you do such a thing? Do you have any idea how much money all the businesses have invested in getting ready for Christmas? You can't just shut the town down like this. Don't you understand that some of the businesses could wind up going bankrupt?
You'll have to go plead your case with the doc. He's the one that established the quarantine. All I'm doing is enforcing it.
Dr. Poindexter, I just don't understand why we can't go home.
Megan and Sally had gone straight to the doctor's as soon as they left the marshal's office.
Diphtheria is a terrible disease, Miss Parker. Surely you understand that we can't take a chance on spreading it to other towns.
Diphtheria?
Yes, ma'am, diphtheria. We have an outbreak in this town, and I'm trying to keep it from getting any worse.
But neither one of us are sick. And I would think you would want everyone who isn't sick to get out of danger.
You don't know whether you're sick or not. You were in contact with young Laura Hastings, were you not?
Yes.
Then that means you've been exposed. Some contract the disease, but present no symptoms at all. But they're still carriers and can infect others. You might already have infected this young woman.
But you don't understand. It's Christmas. I have obligations back home. And forget about me, what about your own citizens? Don't you realize that if they aren't able to do business during the Christmas season, that some of them could go bankrupt?
Do you think I wanted to do something like this at Christmas? Everyone has obligations, including me. And my biggest obligation is to prevent, if at all possible, an epidemic of diphtheria. Now, which is worse, Miss Parker? Would you prefer several businesses to go broke, or men, women, and children to die of diphtheria?
Oh, my God. The little Hastings girl. Has she died?
No, but a little girl named Helen Sinclair has died. And a man named Ralph Walters. And others are sick.
Oh, I didn't know. Yes, of course. If that's the case, I can see that you have no choice.
Marshal Worley was standing in front of his office, leaning on a post that supported the overhanging roof when Smoke and Matt approached.
Did you speak to the doc?
No, but Megan and Sally did. Marshal, we were wondering.
I can't do it, Smoke. I can't let you folks leave and keep everyone else here. How'd that look?
It would look like you're playing favorites. But that's not what I was about to say.
Oh, what was it?
It's going to take some effort to enforce this quarantine. If you think you could use us, Matt and I would be happy to volunteer as deputies.
You would do that?
Yeah. That is, if you want us.
Absolutely I want you. I don't know how to thank you, Smoke. That'd take a lot of the worry out of me.
There was only one church in town, and its pastor, the Reverend Nathaniel Sharkey, was Presbyterian by affiliation. Despite his denomination, though, he conducted his services in an ecumenical way so as to accommodate every citizen in town, regardless of their religious background. Sharkey was working on his Christmas Eve service when Dr. Poindexter came into his office.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
Reverend.
I'm working on my Christmas Eve sermon, but I'm due a break, so I'd love it if you'd have some coffee with me.
Thanks. I believe I will.
There was a small wood-burning stove sitting in the corner, and it was doing a good job of keeping the office warm. A blue metal coffee pot sat on top of the stove, and Reverend Sharkey used an old purificator cloth as a hot pad as he lifted the pot and poured two cups.
You look troubled, George.
I'm afraid there won't be a service on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
What? Why, of course there'll be a church service. Why would you even suggest such a thing?
Reverend, we're facing an epidemic of diphtheria.
A diphtheria epidemic?
We're on the verge of one, yes.
Oh, my, I hadn't heard. Well, I can see why you come to the Lord in prayer.
I'm going to need more than the Lord. I'm also going to need the Lord's house.
What do you mean?
As you know, Reverend, we don't have a hospital in town. If someone needs extra care, I generally keep them in my office for a few days. I have a room in the back just for that. But I'm afraid we may wind up with 50, 60, maybe even 100 patients. I simply don't have the room for that many patients, and I can't be running from house to house to tend to them. I'm going to need a place to keep them.
In other words, you want to turn the church into a hospital?
Yes. Reverend, I know this is asking a lot of you, and if you don't want to,
But of course I do. I don't know what we'd do for beds or even sheets or blankets, but I'm perfectly willing to let the church be used as a hospital.
We can use the pews as beds. I hope we can convince people to bring any extra sheets and blankets they may have to you. They'll have to donate them because after they've been exposed to the diphtheria germ, it'll be necessary to burn them.
If you give me some instruction on what to do, I'll be glad to help you tend to them.
No, I can't ask you to do that. You'll be exposing yourself to the disease.
Well, aren't you exposing yourself?
Well, it's my job to tend to people. I'm a doctor.
And it's my job to tend to souls. I'm a pastor. I'll be there with you, Doctor.
You're a good man, Reverend.
I'll start around town now, gathering up as many sheets and blankets as I can.
Duff was totally unaware of the diphtheria epidemic in Rawhide Butte, and he was planning on traveling there the next day so that he might come back home with Megan. Having come into town early in the afternoon, he decided he'd spend some time in Fiddler's Green. Duff happened to look up toward the door just as Marshal Farrell came into the saloon. Seeing Duff at the bar, Farrell came over.
Hello, Jerry.
Duff, I just received a telegram from Rawhide Butte with some disturbing news.
Megan is in Rawhide Butte.
Yeah, I know.
Marshal, don't tell me something has happened to her.
No, not that I know of. At least not yet.
What do you mean, not yet? What is this about?
Diphtheria. That's what it's about. According to the telegram I just received, the entire town of Rawhide Butte is under quarantine. No one is allowed into town, and no one can leave.
Will the quarantine last through Christmas?
Well, I don't know. I just know that the stagecoach won't be running until further notice.
Then I'm going to get her.
Duff, didn't you hear what I said? Nobody can leave, and nobody can enter the town. Not until this is over. Marshal Worley has the entire town shut down.
Can he do that, Jerry?
Yeah, he can do that.
Can we send telegrams?
I don't see why you couldn't do that.
It took Duff only a couple of minutes to go from the saloon to the Western Union office. Titus Gilmore stepped up to the counter.
Hello, Duff. Need to send a telegram?
Yeah, to Rawhide Butte.
Gilmore had just picked up his pencil, but now he paused and glanced up at Duff.
Rawhide Butte? Well, I just got a telegram from there about a half an hour ago.
About diphtheria?
Yeah. How'd you hear so fast?
Jerry Farrell told me about it. That's why I need to send a telegram. Megan Parker is there, and so are Smoke Jensen and my other host guests. As a matter of fact, I'll be wanting to send a telegram to Smoke as well.
All right. Who's first, Miss Parker?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
I've just heard about the diphtheria epidemic. All here send love and prayers. We'll come to you as soon as I can. Love, Duff.
Got it. Ready for the next one?
Smoke, I'm aware of your situation. Look after Megan for me and stay safe. Duff.
Done.
Please get them sent right away.
Well, you can stay right here and watch. Before you leave the door, it'll be there.
From the Chugwater Defender, diphtheria outbreak. Word has reached this newspaper that an outbreak of diphtheria has struck the town of Rawhide Butte. The entire town has been shut down, with schools and businesses closed. Stagecoach and freight traffic into and out of town has been suspended, and Marshal Worley has posted guards on all the roads to enforce that edict. But, God willing, a Christmas miracle may be in store for the beleaguered citizens of the stricken city. 100 life-saving vials of diphtheria antitoxin are on their way to Rawhide Butte. Were the messengers to be carrying gold, the shipment would not be more valuable.
Smoke Jensen was standing at the west end of the road that came from Millersburg. Matt was standing at the other end. Their job was to prevent anyone from entering or leaving town. It wasn't hard to prevent people from coming into town. All he had to do was explain that they were dealing with an epidemic of diphtheria, and they were more than willing to turn around. It was much more difficult to deal with the people who wanted to leave, often entire families traveling in wagons that were loaded down with all their possessions.
You got no right to keep us here.
The man and his wife were plainly dressed and wearing overcoats against the cold. Two small children were in the wagon behind their parents, looking at Smoke with confused and frightened expressions on their faces.
What's your name, sir?
My name is Bailey. Ron Bailey. I'm a decent citizen, and I've never been in no trouble in my whole life. Like I say, you can't keep us here. I got a wife and kids to look after.
Where are you planning to go?
To Millersburg.
Do you have family there?
No, but that don't matter.
Mr. Bailey, look at it this way. Word of the diphtheria epidemic has already gotten out. Like as not, the people of Millersburg have already set up a roadblock outside of town. And once they learn you're from Rawhide Butte, they aren't going to let you in.
So we should stay here and take a chance on us getting the diphtheria? Or maybe even our youngins?
Mr. Bailey, if none of you have the disease now, and if you just stay in your home until the danger is past, chances are you'll all be all right. And the doctor has sent for some medicine that will cure the disease in those that already have it, and that will stop the spreading any further.
All right.
I appreciate it, Mr. Bailey. You're doing the right thing.
Smoke watched as the wagon went back into the town. He hated doing that. But he knew he'd done the right thing, not only to prevent any possible spread of the disease, but because he was sure that no other town was going to allow anyone from Rawhide Butte to come into their place anyway. Max Dingo had an arrangement with Moe Dunaway, the owner of a small store that was halfway between Hartville and Rawhide Butte. The store provided Dingo and Sidewinder Gorge with provisions, from liquor to food, ammunition, and newspapers. The newspapers weren't merely for idle curiosity, either. An up-to-date source of news was vital to someone like Dingo, who, through the accounts in the paper, could ascertain if anyone was looking for him or any of his men. It also provided him with windows of opportunity. And as he read the story about the shipment of diphtheria antitoxin, he realized that this was just such a window. Dingo held out the newspaper and struck it with the back of his hand.
Boys, we just got us a Christmas present.
My throat hurts. Oh, Megan, what if I'm coming down with diphtheria?
Well, it may just be a case of catarrh. Don't get worried yet. Let's go see the doctor.
How? We're supposed to stay inside. We're under quarantine, remember?
I don't think that's for someone who needs to see a doctor, though. Come on, I'll go with you. I was told he relocated his practice to the church.
Reaching the church a few minutes later, they were surprised by the number of people they saw around it. When they stepped inside, they saw at least a dozen people stretched out on the pews. They were greeted by Reverend Sharkey.
Good morning, ladies.
What's going on? Why are all these people here?
The church has been turned into a hospital. Do either of you need to see the doctor?
Cora does.
Sore throat? Difficulty in swallowing?
Yes.
All right, have a seat over there. Doctor, come see you as soon as he can.
As they waited for the doctor, Megan looked out over the nave where she counted 7 children and 5 adults. Dr. Poindexter and a woman were being kept busy attending to him.
That's Jenny Poindexter. She's the doctor's wife and nurse.
They're really busy. It looks like they could use help.
Who would do such a thing, though? Wouldn't anyone who came to help be exposing themselves to diphtheria? In fact, why don't you leave now and go back to the shop before you catch it, too?
What do you mean, too?
I've got it. I know it, and you know it.
Megan didn't reply because she was pretty sure that Cora did have it. Their fears were confirmed a few minutes later when Dr. Poindexter found the time to come over and make an examination.
Is there anything you can do for it?
Right now, I'm afraid that all we can do is treat it symptomatically.
What does that mean?
It means your throat is going to swell shut so that you can't breathe. I can fix it so that you'll be able to breathe, but that does nothing toward curing the disease.
Is there no cure?
Yeah, there's an antitoxin that'll cure it. I've sent for it, but in the meantime, all I can do is try to keep as many alive as I can until it gets here.
Well, how do you do that?
Well, that depends on how far along it is. If it's advanced to the point that the throat is swollen shut, then I have to do a tracheotomy and an intubation. That means I have to cut a hole in their throat so they can breathe. But if we catch it early enough, we can treat the throat with a solution that will dissolve the covering of mucous membrane. Fortunately, in your case, Miss Enser, we seem to have caught it early enough. I'll just prepare the solution.
A moment later, Dr. Poindexter returned with an atomizer.
Are you going to spray me with perfume?
I'm glad to see that you still have your sense of humor. But yeah, this is very much like a perfume atomizer. I'm going to spray the solution into your throat. I warn you, it's a mixture of water and acid, so it's going to be painful, but it must be done.
Oh, all right.
Doctor, we need a tracheotomy now!
Dr. Poindexter handed the atomizer to Megan.
Here, my dear, you can do this. Spray until it's all gone. And Miss Enser, I encourage you to cough as often and as hard as you can. You need to clear the mucus from building up in your throat.
Even before Dr. Poindexter left, Megan began spraying the mixture into Cora's throat. By the time the solution was exhausted, Cora had coughed up a good deal of yellow pus. She was breathing a bit easier when Dr. Poindexter returned.
Good. Good. You seem to have gotten rid of a lot of it.
As Dr. Poindexter left to tend to a new arrival, Reverend Sharkey came over to speak with Megan and Cora.
Miss Enser, I got a place for you over here. Unfortunately, we run out of sheets and blankets.
Oh, do I have to stay? Can't I go back home?
I'm afraid not. You'll have to have your throat treated again in a couple of hours.
Cora, I'll go back to your place and get you a sheet and blanket.
I suggest you get the oldest you can find. You'll have to be burned after this.
Well, get the ones off my bed. You've been my guest, so I gave you the newest.
All right.
There was nobody on the street, and all the stores were empty as Megan hurried back to the dress shop. When she went inside, she saw Sally working with one of the figures in the Christmas display.
Sally?
I didn't feel like staying in the hotel room. Smoke is helping the marshal, and I was all alone. I thought I would come down here and spend some time with you and Cora. But when I found you'd gone, I decided to work on the display. You and Cora have done such a wonderful job. It's a shame nobody's going to be able to enjoy it.
Cora's sick. She has diphtheria.
Oh, Megan, no. Where is she?
She's at the church. Dr. Poindexter has turned the church into a hospital. Oh, Sally, you should see it. It's filling up very quickly. I'm here to get some bed sheets, and then I'm going back. I'm going to help the doctor.
I wonder if he would take my help as well.
I'm sure he would. Right now he's overwhelmed. So many patients, and only he, his wife, and Reverend Sharkey to tend to them.
When Megan and Sally returned to the church a few minutes later, they found Cora lying on one of the pews. Quickly, Megan covered her, then put a pillow under her head.
Thanks.
There were even more people in the church now. Dr. Poindexter was doing another tracheotomy.
Miss Parker, Dr. Poindexter asked if you would mind staying around for a while and helping out.
I planned to. What does he want me to do?
He said you did a good job applying the spray mixture to Miss Anser's throat. Perhaps you could do that with the others.
All right. Where do I get the mixture?
Mrs. Poindexter will keep you supplied. All you have to do is administer the spray.
I'd like to help as well.
Dr. Poindexter approached the women.
Yes, of course I can use you, but I hope you understand that you'll be exposing yourself to the sickness. I can't promise you that you won't come down with the disease yourself.
I'll be no more exposed than you, your wife, the Reverend, or Megan.
Well, the difference is they've already been exposed in one way or another. You haven't.
I have now.
Yeah, I suppose you have.
So what would you have me do?
Mostly just mix the acid and water solutions and spray the applications into the throats of the people as it's needed. Megan, you've already done this once. You can show her what to do.
All right.
Doctor, come quickly! Mrs. Abernathy has stopped breathing!
I may have to do a tracheal intubation. Megan, you and...
Sally.
Come with me. You two may as well see what a tracheal intubation is, so that if I need your assistance in one of these procedures, you'll at least have some idea of what's going on.
Megan and Sally hurried after the doctor, who walked quickly to the other side of the church. Sally and Megan watched the procedure, trying to take in the details should they be called upon. That was when Megan felt herself growing very lightheaded, and she stumbled back a few steps before Sally caught her.
Are you all right?
Yeah. I just got a little dizzy is all.
Sit down and put your head between your knees.
Megan followed his directions.
I'll get you a drink of water.
Moving to the water barrel that was set up at the back of the church, Sally hesitated. How was she going to take the water back to Megan? There were a couple of drinking cups handy, but hadn't they been used by those who had already been stricken by the disease? It was Reverend Sharkey who came to her assistance.
Oh, here, let me show you something.
Reverend Sharkey took a clean sheet of paper and folded it into a triangle. Then, after four more folds, he opened it up, forming a perfect cup. That done, he held the cup under the spigot, filled it with water, then handed it to Sally.
Here you go, my dear.
Oh, what a marvelous thing to know.
Now, I learned this during the 3 years I was a missionary to China. The Chinese are very particular about using community drinking vessels. The only way I could get them to take communion was providing them with individual cups.
Sally took the water back to Megan, who was looking very pale now.
I don't blame you for getting a little dizzy there. I was getting a bit woozy myself, watching.
That isn't it, Sally. My throat feels raw. I'm coming down with diphtheria.
There are 100 vials of serum.
Dr. Taylor was speaking to Deputy Sheriff Gib Crabtree in Cheyenne.
Take the buggy. It's 75 miles to Rawhide Butte. I've arranged for you to change teams at Goodwin's Ranch, Davis Ranch, Little Bear, Chugwater, Blue Elder, and Bordeaux. That's every 10 miles, and you should be able to maintain a steady 10-mile-per-hour speed, which means you should be in Rawhide Butte inside of 8 hours.
Unless I'm held up by weather.
I talked to the stagecoach driver this morning. He said that as of yesterday, the road was clear, and Chugwater and Bordeaux both say there's no snow. I don't foresee any difficulty from the weather. Stop by Lambert's restaurant before you leave. Norman has fried a chicken for you to take with you. And you can take a bottle of whiskey to help keep you warm and keep your strength. But don't get drunk.
I won't.
Godspeed you on your mission, Deputy Crabtree.
Is that better?
Sally had just finished spraying the acid mixture into Megan's throat.
Oh, my, that hurts.
I'm sure it does. But it's necessary to keep your throat open so you can breathe. I'm sorry to have to do it.
Now I know what I was doing to all the people I treated.
You were keeping them alive.
Christmas?
What?
I had such plans for Christmas. Now there won't be a Christmas.
Of course there will be a Christmas. We may have to have it a little later, after everyone is cured, but I promise you, we will have a Christmas.
Sally, why don't you go to your hotel room and just stay there? Cora has the disease. I have it. There's no sense in you coming down with it as well.
What good would that do? I'm already exposed to it. What if I went to the hotel, caught the disease, and nobody knew about it? At least here, I'm already in the hospital.
Yeah, I guess if you look at it that way, I'm lucky I was here.
Absolutely.
What in heaven's name are you two finding to laugh about?
Joie de vivre.
What?
Joy of life.
What we have left of it.